time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Steps back, three. Yes, sir.
Get a shot up. This is for the win.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to a beautiful Tuesday edition of Overtime. The weather may change in a hurry this afternoon into the evening time. Stay weather aware, as we hear all the time lately. Stay up to date with all six of our stations housed in this building for the latest and greatest weather updates throughout the day. Hopefully not a stormy day. Beautiful day right now in the 605. Well, typically, we have Minnesota Vikings Thursday. It might feel like Thursday. It might smell like Thursday, but it is Tuesday. But we've got the Baker family in studio here. Dustin Baker, Stone Baker, set to preview the Italy trip ahead, the latest in the Vikings news circles, quarterback competition, and some broad NFL news in hour number one. We'll also rank up the Vikings offensive position groups, 1 through 6. I got it marked off in quarterback, running back, fullback, tight end, wide receiver, interior offensive line, and the tackle position for Minnesota. We'll rank them up at the end of hour number one in a fun-filled Minnesota Vikings Tuesday edition of Overtime. Dustin Baker stepping overseas later on this week. So no Vikings Thursday, Vikings Tuesday this week here in the middle portion of June. At the latter stage of the show today, headlines and highlights. We'll get you the latest from the NBA, where we saw a silent MSG in the second half. They certainly fought hard down the stretch. Both teams had some pretty lucky baskets in the final couple of moments, but the Spurs hang on to a very important victory in game number 3. We'll dive into the odds for game 4 and beyond. And the latest NHL news, a couple coaching hires to tell you about in the National Hockey League. And then we'll round out the show with the latest news from the NFL, including a marquee retirement of one former Cleveland Brown, and the good, the bad, and the ugly before we are done on a Tuesday. Let's get right into the scorecard. Certainly a lot to talk about from around the sports world, but we start in the NBA last night, where the Spurs found a way to get it done. 115-111 the final score. San Antonio led by 11 after one, and then let it all go very early into the second quarter. And me, like many, said, here we go again. The Knicks are going to come from behind. They're going to find a way to win this game, and this is going to be a snoozer of a series. Not so fast, my friend. Spurs balloon it back out to a 12-point advantage at one point. Hang on to it late. De'Aaron Fox did not have the greatest stats in the game. He was a tremendously important player last night. Here's Fox on the importance of winning last night on the road to his team.
Every game that we've played, I think we've had the bigger lead in all these games. And it's the big thing is, you know, how can we sustain the way that we're playing? I think in the first half, we've come out, we've hit first. You know, they've responded. And sometimes we didn't respond well, but we kind of kept the games close. But I think tonight we responded well to their run. They had a big run in the first half. They get up at halftime, and we're, you know, thinking to ourselves, how can we get back to playing the way that we were playing, with the ball moving, with getting stops, not giving up offensive rebounds, not turning the ball over. And whenever we were able to do that, I think that's why we were able to, one, get back into the game, and two, kind of grow our lead and finish the game off.
That's De'Aaron Fox. Last night's highlight statistically for San Antonio: the team shot 46% from the field, only turned it over 8 times. Stephon Castle had 23. Victor Wembanyama had 32 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists. Here's his coach, Mitch Johnson, on that performance.
I'm sure Victor has numerous sources of motivation, and I don't think any of us are surprised or would expect anything different than a strong performance and him being on his front foot in terms of being in attack mode. You know, for me and the staff, our job is to help the guys. There's no momentum. There's no carryover. We learn what we saw and experienced from the previous game, and now plural, when you get into series, you got to settle in, and the clarity that comes from watching the tape and arguing with your staff and trying to help the guys is the job. And that's what we'll continue to do, and we'll have the same approach in the next 48 hours.
Job well done last night for the Spurs, winning at MSG 115-111. Leading the series still remains New York's. They lead it 2-1. Jalen Brunson had 32 points. OG Anunoby pretty good with 28. But Stephen A. Smith going after Brunson today for playing selfish basketball last night.
I'm putting it on the Knicks. I'm not taking any credit away from the San Antonio Spurs to be the young team that they are, to walk into Madison Square Garden and to do what they did. But I do think there's a lot about the New York Knicks that was out of character compared to what we had seen from them over the previous couple of months or so, especially en route to this 13-game winning streak. Jalen Brunson, I got to put this loss on him as much as anybody. You launched double the amount of shots of Karl Anthony Towns. You shot more than Karl Anthony Towns and Josh Hart combined. You look at Josh Hart. He was flowing earlier in the game. In the second half, you didn't find him. Karl Anthony Towns, you didn't find him pretty much all game long. They went small, for crying out loud. You had an opportunity to exploit that and take advantage by getting the ball to Karl Anthony Towns. You didn't do that. Jalen Brunson is a superstar in this game. He's one of the clutch players. He's missed the clutch. He's a closer. But last night, it looked, I don't know this, it looked like he was playing to win Finals MVP, and he was playing to win Game 3.
And that's Stephen A. Smith on one. Jalen Brunson did finish with 32 points. A lot of physicality last night. Some would say dirty play from Victor Wembanyama. Evan Cohen says it shows that he's willing to do whatever it takes to scratch and claw back into this series.
If I'm a Spurs fan last night, I need to know my team's going to do anything it takes, even if it gets a little dirty at times. Oh. Now, I'm surprised Wemby has to be the dirty one, because usually you bring somebody else off the bench to do that. There's a reason that Bismack Biyombo, Kelly Olynyk, and Mason Plumlee are sitting there. That's for them to do. I actually think for him, it just shows he will do whatever it takes.
And that's Victor Wembanyama, certainly 32 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. A very nice, impressive performance. Here's ESPN New York's Alan Hahn on what made him so effective last night in the paint and otherwise.
This is what he did against the Thunder.
Yes.
This is how he was so effective against the Thunder, is because he was able to do that and then come over as the late help or the rover. And you saw the Knicks hesitate. Every time they saw that shadow, they did not want to shoot the basketball. Also, the 2 days off in between games, he was a different guy, especially in the fourth quarter. We saw him fade at times in the fourth quarters and late in the first halves as well, running out of gas because it was a lot of up and down. He looked fresh in this game, and the 2 days off is something to watch, because after Wednesday, every game is 2 days off.
That's Alan Hahn of ESPN New York. Lastly, before we put it to bed on the series for now, Tim Legler offering up some thoughts on Mike Brown's commentary post-game. I got to tell you, I'm tired of it. Every time an NBA team loses a playoff game, we complain about the officiating. That's what Mike Brown did last night. Here's Legler's thoughts on his commentary postgame.
I'm not seeing a one-way whistle. There's certainly going to be calls that are going to be missed either way. Here's the thing. This is so difficult to officiate because of the amount of physicality that's taking place all over the floor. So sometimes, and I said it on the air in one of the calls, it just seemed like a little selective on a particular play that you see a lot. Very difficult job for these officials. I don't think we were sitting there saying, man, the Knicks are getting the short end of this over and over and over again. Certainly you could point to certain calls throughout the game, but you could do the same thing for San Antonio.
And that's Tim Legler of ESPN. Game 4 is looming on Wednesday night. Again, Knicks lead it 2-1. The spread is the exact same as it was heading into last night. Knicks favored by 2.5 at MSG. Spurs at MSG, 7:30. On ABC, coming up tomorrow night. Coming up tonight in the NHL, Stanley Cup Final game number 4. Vegas looking for a 3-1 lead in the series. They lead it 2-1, home to the Canes, 7 o'clock on ABC. Carolina a -115 favorite on the money line. Yesterday in Major League Baseball, very light slate locally. Yankees beat the Guardians 7-5 in Cleveland. And Milwaukee in extras beat the West Sacramento-based A's 15-14. In a Major League Baseball game, Milwaukee 41-23. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Twins right back in action in Detroit, 5:40 start, 5 o'clock pregame coverage against the Tigers right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Yankees at the Guardians, 5:40. Cardinals at Mets, Braves at White Sox, Royals home to the Rangers, Cubs visit the Rockies, Brewers at the A's, the nightcap tonight at 9:05. Over to the world of college football before we move on to Minnesota Vikings Tuesday coverage with Dustin Baker. Paul Feinbaum talking about Brendan Sorsby and college sports being in DEFCON 1 right now.
College sports went to DEFCON 1 yesterday, and that's rare because the sport has gone so low in so many different circumstances. But everyone but Texas Tech officials were in unanimous agreement that this is one of the worst rulings, because forget whether college players get paid and all the things that go along with it. This is about the integrity of what happens on a Saturday afternoon. And Brendan Sorsby bet on games while he was at Indiana. Remember, he went to Cincinnati. He is a transfer. He has not played a down for Texas Tech, and they maintain they haven't done anything wrong. They sent him to rehab. It's a great example for the youth of America, and you can stop laughing now over your cornflakes. But the point is, what happens now? The statement yesterday from the Big 12 commissioner was interesting because he really didn't say anything, and I believe that Brett Yormark is probably the only one left that can stop this. He can declare the Sorsby ineligible. Yes, it would be litigated, but at least somebody would stand up. Until now, no one has really done anything, especially this court in Texas.
You know, typically, you can rely on Paul Feinbaum to be the grumpy old man yelling at the sky, gosh, we need some rain right now. Well, typically, he's on an island. He's that grumpy old guy. But everybody feels that way when it comes to the ruling yesterday. And most people are absolutely flabbergasted that this is going on. It's allowed to continue. And frankly, I was pretty darn inspired yesterday afternoon into last night about the banding together, the red rovering of the arms of Big Ten, SEC, other folks saying, okay, we're not going to play Texas Tech in any sport moving forward due to this ruling. Feels like a pretty inspiring moment. We'll see. The NCAA has appealed that decision as of yesterday. And lastly, before we move off the scorecard, D1 baseball. Alabama beat St. John 7-2 yesterday. Oklahoma finds their way past Kansas 13-2, which means we have our final eight. Our College World Series roster is set. We've got Troy and West Virginia meeting at 1 o'clock in Omaha on Friday, ESPN. Ole Miss and North Carolina, 6 o'clock Friday night for game one there. Saturday, Oklahoma, Alabama, and later on Saturday night, Texas and Georgia. There's your eight, and a full College World Series preview for you right now at ESPNSiouxFalls.com. Let's dive across the table now. Minnesota Vikings Tuesday edition of the show. Soon to be the Italian-bound Baker family in the studio. Dustin, great to have you as always, my friend. How you doing this week?
Not bad. It's cool to be back with such a quick turnaround. We leave for Rome on Thursday morning, driving up to Minneapolis because it was about $2,000 cheaper to fly out of that destination. And yeah, me and the kid were pretty excited.
Certainly, there's a lot to look forward to. I wanted to ask you about planning. I know that this has been on your docket for a while. How far out do you, in your travel, you're a pretty well-traveled guy, how far out do you book these things from hotel, airline, experiences, and kind of what's your experience kind of lend those people that might be looking about something international? What are a few tips that you might have for people that are planning something like you're about to embark on in a couple days?
Sure. So I picked out these three places that we visited in the last 2 years, Norway, Ireland, Italy, as places that my wife and I both wanted to see collectively. So we are down to the third of our three-leg European trip. I always book in December. That feels like the peak time if you're going to travel in June or July, peak time for affordability, I should say. And usually it's cheaper to fly out of Minneapolis than Omaha or Sioux Falls, but sometimes you can find a comparable deal flying out of Sioux Falls. So that's my role, is to point, you know, to the map and then buy the airfare, which is usually affordable if you game the system in December. And then that's where my wife comes in, because she starts to plan the itinerary. There are a lot of vacations, like if you were going to, I don't know, Denver or something this way, you could go and just kind of exist for a week. If you're going to a place like Italy, you have to book stuff in advance. So my wife has been systematically booking things like, you know, Leaning Tower of Pisa, which we'll see right away when we're there, and the Vatican well in advance. So it's not like somebody realistically could show up in Italy and expect to see all those things by walking up. So you have to do those well in advance. And thankfully, my wife is marvelous at it. She's like a project manager, so we're all good to go.
When it comes down to that itinerary, is it pretty rigid for the Baker fam over there? Is it, hey, if we want to, we can do this day, this, that day? What does it look like? And how full is the schedule? And how much free time per day do you think you have to organically come into certain experiences?
My mom asked me the exact same question yesterday. So if it was just Stone and I going to Las Vegas like we did in January, there's not much rigidity other than the magicians we have booked, because we'll just go do whatever we want, eat wherever we want. When you go to a place that is popular as Italy, you have to have a, unless you don't care about seeing the big stuff, you have to have a structured schedule. So there might be some optionality, like what restaurant you want to go to. And one thing about we've learned through our quasi research is that Italians eat at like 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be eating pretty late night. So we can vary on restaurants, although I'm pretty sure my wife has those already scouted. So a normal vacation, I'm all for winging it. But when you're going to a place that's this far away and it's this much of a hot spot, there's not much flexibility to say, you know what? Instead of the Vatican today, I'm just going to do that. You have to stay to your schedule.
And certainly there's a lot to explore. Lastly, before we move off of the upcoming Italian trip for you, what are the big cities? I know that you alluded to a couple last time. You told me that not so sure about one particular one, but I would assume you're going to Rome. You're flying into Rome. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then from there, what are the other big cities you guys are planning on hitting?
I wrote them down because I knew this question was coming. There had to be some cuts because we are quote, only in quote there for 11 days. Mm-hmm. But our city itinerary is as follows. Florence and Pisa on the first day after we fly into Rome. Then Milan, Venice, Naples, Pompeii, and then we end in Rome, which I think is 3 days. So we're hitting the biggies. I don't think we do much all the way down in the south. There had to be, like Sicily, there had to be something. Otherwise, you'd have to go there for 2 or 3 weeks. So those are the biggies.
Certainly, there's a lot to see there. And that trip will take the Baker fam out to the United States for quite some time. So no Minnesota Vikings Thursday next week. But we got a Vikings Tuesday right now. And certainly, there's always a lot of news in the National Football League. But let's talk about the Minnesota Vikings' latest and greatest, the latest drama out there. Tom Pelissero was on KFAN. That's been well dissected about the quarterback battle. Also wanted to talk about the Freudian slip, if you will, of Coach Kevin O'Connell that has rocked Vikings Twitter. Again, I'm poking fun because I'm a Viking hater, but it's really not a story as much as Kevin O'Connell just saying, you know, as a former, as a captain last year, whatever he said, taken out of context, run with it. He hates J.J. McCarthy. They're going to trade him. What do you take away from the latest hoopla in what has been a hoopla-filled quarterback offseason for Minnesota?
Regarding the quarterback competition, so McCarthy, whether or not he's a captain or a former captain, none of this surprises me because the moment Kyler Murray was signed, to me, it was bada bing. That is our QB1. I have never perceived Kyler Murray through the lens of, oh, this guy's mediocre. Hopefully he can rebound in Minneapolis. I think the guy is a stud, and I think I've been consistent about that, even when he was on the Cardinals roster. So when I saw that Murray was coming aboard in March, I was like, oh, okay, they're going to have a sham quarterback battle, and then maybe if Murray gets hurt, McCarthy will be the guy. So when O'Connell accidentally said former and then quickly cleaned it up, I was like, okay, he gets it. Like, this is what's happening. And there's a reason that if you go to, like, DraftKings right now, you can gamble on Kyler Murray as the front runner to win the job with a minus 1,000 money line. That's like Steph Curry hitting a free throw money line. But it really is, for real. So it's no surprise to me whatsoever that O'Connell may have slipped. But you can also just see it. Kevin Seifert, I'm not sure how you say it. He said it best about a week and a half ago in his article that McCarthy will probably improve. And he'll probably look great at training camp. But it's not going to be enough to knock off Kyler Murray, who's already starting from that point and probably going to get even more fancy within O'Connell's offense. So to me, it's a matter of formality that Murray is going to win the QB1 job. And then in the regular season, because Murray usually misses 3 or 4 games, McCarthy will get his big chance to get that job and never give it back.
So there's a lot of questions on the table, and the one that was kind of run with this week was from the Pelissero commentary about maybe they could potentially shop J.J. McCarthy. They like Carson Wentz. They brought him back, and Carson Wentz really isn't a QB3. He's more of a QB2 league-wide. Not that he's amazing, but he's kind of in that stage of his career. He's earned that reputation. He's functionally good enough to be a QB2. If J.J. McCarthy is out there on the trade block, he has a good preseason, and they're flirting with the idea of, hey, this guy, we could just go 2 QBs and have Wentz and Murray and trade McCarthy for a 3rd-rounder, 4th-rounder, 5th-rounder. What do you think the value is? And I don't think the probability is very high of McCarthy getting moved even prior to the deadline, much less prior to the season. What's the probability that a move happens in your eyes? Is it 10% or is it a little lower than that? And what do you expect to get back if McCarthy were to be traded?
As of right now, I would say the probability of McCarthy getting traded before the regular season or before the deadline would be about 15 or 20%. Now, the reason that I can't properly gauge it is because there is a chance that he gets pissed and squawks. Yep. He doesn't seem like that type, but if he did, then the Vikings would really have no recourse if he said, I don't want to be on this team anymore. And always remember that the Vikings fired the guy who drafted McCarthy on January 30th. So it wouldn't be unheard of for the team to move on, because through their actions, they've already admitted, well, this guy who, you know, didn't draft very well, we fired him. So besides O'Connell, there's no 10,000% allegiance to McCarthy, because the general manager from the Seattle Seahawks, Nolan Teasley, is different. Now, getting something in return, what we saw 7 years ago, Josh Rosen fetched a second rounder, I think. I would say to a team like the Cardinals, who's in quarterback hell, probably already eyeing Arch Manning and Dante Moore, maybe the Jets, maybe the Chargers with the Harbaugh connection could stash him. I would say probably a fourth round pick. Maybe they'll have a sweet condition that it could be a third, but probably a fourth or a fifth rounder. But in the end, remember, Bert, that the last two of the last three Vikings seasons were ruined by quarterback injuries. It doesn't seem weird to me at all that they have a stacked quarterback room per functionable bodies, because we could have used those during the Jaren Hall run in 2023 or last year when Max Brosmer was making, you know, blooper plays. So I think McCarthy stays aboard unless he personally says, I've had it with you guys.
And certainly there's a lot up for debate there. J.J. McCarthy likely not going to be traded this offseason or prior to the NFL trade deadline, but certainly could happen. We'll dive right into the latest Vikings news around the corner. Maybe some more sprinkles in on the upcoming Italy trip for the Baker fam. Broad NFL news. And then before we're done in hour number one, we're going to rank up the Vikings offensive position groups. I am not an expert on the Minnesota Vikings. I'm an expert, but I've got the wide receiver unit on the offense as the best unit for Minnesota. I think that that is fair-ish. We'll see exactly what kind of alignment we have at the end of hour number one. We'll do that exercise on the defensive side of the ball post-trip for the Baker fam here before too long. Minnesota Vikings Tuesday continues right after this on ESPN Sioux Falls.
Get ESPN with the free app and online. Grab your phone or call us up on your smart device. Now let's get you back to overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Minnesota Vikings Tuesday edition of Overtime. The Baker family heading international. A big Italy trip on the way later this week. So we bumped up Minnesota Vikings Day from Thursday to Tuesday. Hour number one. Podcast links are always available. If you miss any of the show, ESPNSiouxFalls.com or the free ESPN Sioux Falls mobile app. Well, during the summer, during the holiday breaks, we have the opportunity to be joined in studio, not just by Dustin Baker, but his son as well, Stone Baker. Stone, certainly always great to have you in studio. You got a big trip in front of you. I've got two questions. I didn't even tell you this other question. It just popped into my head. What is the go-to airline activity for you on these long flights? Are you on the phone? Are you watching something on the back of the seat, iPad? Are you reading a book? Or are you listening to a podcast? What are you doing on the airline? And what is the most looked forward to activity or day for the Italy trip for you, Stone? What do you think?
I watch a movie on the screen or something, or I just go on my phone.
Yep. What about napping? Do you nap on the airplane?
I sleep.
Yeah.
I don't nap.
Yeah, it's about 7 hours, 7.5 hours from Minneapolis.
Okay.
We have to fly into Ireland first, believe it or not.
Gotcha. Okay. So, and then if there's one day or an activity that your mom has planned or a place that you want to see, Leaning Tower of Pisa, maybe you want to get after some pizza there in Italy, what is the go-to activity or item for you on this trip?
An item?
Yeah, what's one thing you're most looking
forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Colosseum, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and the Vatican.
Certainly, there's a lot to see. You've brought some goodies with us here in terms of challenge. You got this Brain Buster. And full disclosure, this could be pretty difficult and it could make us look not so smart, Dustin. So we're going to limit how many of these we do. But Stone, it's a random NFL player generator. Let it rip, my friend. Give me one name, and your dad and I will go to work on who this player plays for right now in the National Football League.
Okay. The first one is Jack Fox.
Jack Fox. I've got a good guess on this one. I think Jack Fox played for the Detroit Lions. Does he still play for the Detroit Lions?
That is, in fact, correct.
Boom, baby. Let's go. Give me another one of these.
Who's next?
Brandon Graham.
Brandon Graham?
Yeah.
Brandon Graham.
Eagles. Defensive line.
Yep, that's
there we go. Two for two. We're pretty darn good. He's kind of been retired, came back. He came back last year briefly, and I don't really know where his status is right now, but he was an Eagle as of last year.
The next one is Josh Downs.
Josh Downs.
Okay, I know that.
That will be the Indianapolis Colts wide receiver. One more.
One more.
All right. Let me try to get a good one.
This is fun.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on it.
All right, one more for me, Stone. What do you think?
Hit us with it.
I'm not ready yet.
Well, you got to be.
Random NFL players. Give me the last one.
Ben Van Sermon.
Offensive lineman, isn't he?
So the last name, it's Van, V-A-N, and then the last name after that is Sermon?
Yep.
Van Sermon. Spell the last name, S-I-R-M-A-N.
S-U, like it's Van, and then S-U-M-E-R-E-N.
I think he's an offensive lineman.
Van Sumeren. You know, I'm actually stumped on that one. Do you have a guess, Dustin?
The Cardinals?
No.
I'm going to go with the Raiders.
No.
Okay, what's the answer?
Buffalo Bills, number 43, position FB.
Fullback. Fullback trivia on the show. Should've appreciate it, Stone Baker. Hey, we did pretty good. We held our own there. I think that's 3 out of 4. For those keeping score at home, big Italy trip ahead for you guys. Vikings' latest news. I know we covered the quarterback drama, every week there's going to be something leading up to it when you have a quarterback competition like this one where you're going to have something that gets looked into heavily. Just wait until you start seeing all the video of Kyler Murray having a bad day, J.J. McCarthy having a great day, Carson Wentz out-dueling them both. We'll see a lot of this coming up throughout the summer. But what else is on the news items for the Minnesota Vikings this week?
Okay, there isn't much because we just conversed on Thursday, but mandatory minicamp starts this week, so you'll get even more talkers about, you know, mm-hmm. who said this on the microphone and what did that mean. Other than that, the other two noteworthies that stuck out were Brian Flores, out of nowhere, won the George Halas Award, which is voted on by Pro Football Writers of America. They pick the best player or coach who finds success in the face of adversity. And as you know, Brian Flores has been suing the NFL for about 5 years, and he had a win at the Supreme Court in the last few weeks. So he got that award, which kind of came out of nowhere. It shows that the world isn't against him. You know, the writers enjoy him. And then kind of a footnote, but I always find this exciting each June, is ESPN releases its Football Power Index, which is basically a rubric that tells you power rankings and then strength of schedule, playoff percentages. And the Vikings are ranked as the 19th best team in the NFL with a 29% probability of reaching the postseason. So we're kind of back into that like Kirk Cousins era of forecasting where the team is expected to go 8-9 or 9-8, and it'll be up to them to beat the odds.
So 19th overall, mm-hmm. and you said 29%?
Yeah, okay. their percentage to make, I mean, this thing, if they win week one, mm-hmm. that'll climb to like 45%. So, yeah. You know, it's just a thermometer right now is what it is. But right now they are considered ESPN's somewhat scientific power rankings, number 19 in the NFL.
Where do you have them right now? Because obviously you're more bullish than that.
Yeah.
You had the Vikings as a fringe playoff or making the playoffs this year. Where would you rank them, and what would your personal percentage be right now?
Okay, so I think if I sat down and did power rankings at this moment, they'd end up around 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. But I am bullish, as you said, because I expect Kyler Murray to be the Vikings quarterback for the next 4 to 5 years at minimum. I think he is that good. And then the NFC North is powerful. I don't think any of the teams have huge weaknesses. There's like in years past, you know all too well, there's always one or two teams that are just, we kind of smack them around. Sometimes the Vikings are the ones that get smacked around. We don't have that anymore mm-hmm. in the NFC North. Every division game is like, oh, Lord, we got to play these guys. Still, I think the Vikings are good enough to achieve an 11-5 record, which would probably put them in the wild card round. I will say that I do think Kevin O'Connell really needs to get a playoff win under his belt, because it is strange it's like a Marvin Lewis, Jeff Fisher type of thing to go 4 seasons without a playoff win and then also come back for year number 5 and pretty much have blanketed job security.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, too, and again, this is tongue-in-cheek partially as a guy that roots against your team, but Justin Jefferson, J.J., no playoff victories. Kevin O'Connell, no playoff victories. And then Kyler Murray.
Zero.
No playoff victories. It's interesting, at least. They certainly have had a lot of success without winning a playoff game just yet for Minnesota or otherwise, in the case of one Kyler Murray. When we come back, I'm going to save some additional time here because we have a very delicate and tough conversation to have around the corner that is centered on the Hammond, Indiana, Chicago Bears. I'm curious your take on that potential maneuver for the Bears after it is starting to be swirled around in the concrete mixer, if you will, before it gets poured out and they lay the foundation in Hammond, Indiana for the Bears. Do you like it? Do you love it? Do you get it? Do you hate it? Very excited to get the opinion of Dustin Baker on the Chicago Bears leaving Chicago pretty soon. Right around the corner. Also, we'll rank up the Vikings' offensive position groups. Where is this team at their best offensively? And what group is the biggest liability or two in the offensive side for the Minnesota Vikings? That and more coming up next on a Tuesday, June 9th edition of Overtime right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
Overtime is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Right back with you on this Minnesota Vikings Tuesday edition of Overtime. Still to come in hour number two, headlines, highlights, NBA, NHL, latest, including a couple hires in the National Hockey League. The San Antonio Spurs, a big win last night in game three at MSG, 115-111. There will be no sweep in the NBA Finals. The Chicago Bears might not be, in matter of fact, the Chicago Bears for much longer. That's where I wanted to start the segment here with Dustin Baker. Obviously a division rival, a team that we don't care about, but by respect and adoration within the division, you kind of want that team to be good and notable and in the right place, and you want to beat them. But what was your initial reaction to this news that Hammond, Indiana is not just a joke and a laughing line for Chicago Bears fans? It's starting to solidify into a legitimate option, and some would say a likely option for the future of the Bears.
To me, this has been a slow burn. I think the Bears have been trying to get either, is it a renovated stadium or a whole new stadium? And it just hasn't worked out. Nobody will budge. So I understand why the ownership has perceived itself as forced to look at other options. When I first saw this, however many months ago, I thought it was leverage. Like, all right, well, screw you. We're going to be the Indiana Bears people. Now it feels like they're flirting with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim type of arrangement. So I don't think overall it's great for Chicago or the team. Like, I've tried to put myself in their shoes. It would be inconceivable for the Vikings to go be the Hudson Vikings of Wisconsin, but also Minnesota. Like, it just, that's not how it works. So I do feel bad for Bears fans, especially those that are ingrained in the culture in the city of Chicago and don't want to see the team moved. But I think also it's a little bit more symbolic because it's not like Hammond is that far away. Like, I went to a Vikings 49ers game in the 2021 season, and we had to drive like an hour from my friend's place in San Francisco to get to the game in Santa Clara. So they should not be called the San Francisco 49ers. They should be called the Santa Clara 49ers. So this happens. It's just going to be what type of marketing the Bears put on it if they can sell the fan base on potentially going to Indiana.
And certainly it brings up the point, though. We talk about the New Jersey Meadowlands-based Jets and Giants. You talk about all sorts of other teams on the move or in the ballpark. Orchard Park is the home of the Buffalo Bills. They're not in Buffalo. They're in Orchard Park, New York. The Kansas City Chiefs, Kansas City Missouri Chiefs, are moving to Kansas City, Kansas. Really pretty darn soon, but it really kind of balances this. Do the owners want a friendly tax environment, opportunity to make money in a friendly tax environment where they can get stadium funding, partially funded by taxpayers, or do they really care about fan experience and walkability and being in downtown Chicago and saying, hey, let's go get pizza and then we're going to the Bears game? You can't do that if you're going to have it in Hammond, Indiana. I'm sure there'll be some pop-up spots and there'll be some neighborhoods grow around if that ends up being the site of the Chicago Bears' next stadium. But it's really kind of a balance there of what ownership wants and what ownership wants to deliver to their fans.
Yeah, I think they have wanted to have it both ways where they can get a new stadium in the metropolitan area, you know, with that walkability factor. But they just they haven't had any luck. So somebody within that power structure says, like, we're not getting what we want here. We're going to have to try explore this Indiana, this Hammond thing. And then it's just gotten so far that that looks more attractive. Now, to your point, there are all kinds of examples where they're just baked into us now, or we call them New York Giants. But they're really the New Jersey Giants. So there is precedent, and we will get used to it. It's just that the Chicago Bears are so inherently linked to Soldier Field. I mean, we're talking their history, that it doesn't feel right or just for them to go play in some offshoot Indiana town. I think that is what is so hard to get around, is the tradition that would be smacked in the face if they really do this thing.
And I just threw it in Google as well, because this is an obvious question. People are saying Arlington Park, which is a northern suburb, Hammond, Indiana. Why can't they just stay at Soldier Field? Why don't they just renovate Soldier Field? And Google spit this out at me. Quick 6 points here. Ownership and control, lakefront and land restrictions, historic preservation concerns, financial cost, debt and ongoing costs, and then political and public opposition. Obviously, taxpayers have varying opinions about whether the billionaires should fund their own stadium or fund their own renovations. But the one big line of demarcation here, two things about Soldier Field that the average person might not know, and frankly, I didn't really know until diving into this a little bit deeper this week. The Bears don't own Soldier Field. It's owned by the city of Chicago and managed by the Chicago Park District, and it is a historical site. So it's a little bit different. The 2002 renovation removed its National Historic Landmark designation. The stadium's iconic colonnades and historic character still carry preservation expectations, and a full demolition could lead to preservation lawsuits and federal state review. So it's very complex and complicated. Have you been to Soldier Field? Because it's a really cool venue. You could argue and say cheerfully it's a dump in a way, but it's also got a really great vibe to it. I like Soldier Field quite a bit, and it would be pretty heartbreaking for them to leave that and also just get rid of the stadium, eventually demolishing it or partially demolishing Soldier Field.
Yeah, I went there week 17 or week 18 of 2022. And the thing that struck me is that it's so unconventional that when I was walking up to it with my friend, I was like, is this it? Like, because it didn't have like a big jump out at you factor.
Yep.
And then I think that's part of the the lore of it, is that it didn't arrive in the big wave of domes or like the U.S. Bank stadiums now that are so emphatic. There was also like very limited tailgating, like from what you would usually see, like the space and availability at other NFL stadiums. So I think that's another thing that the owners probably want to get with the times and have those accommodations that are not available when everything is so regulated. But yeah, when I went there, I was struck by how unconventional it was, because I've probably been to 20 NFL stadiums in my life, 15 to 20, and that one was so nonchalant. But I'm right there with you that it didn't matter, because there was such historical value, and the Vikings won that day, so I was happy.
And certainly it's an awesome stadium, but it's interesting. You think about other stadiums, especially back in the 90s, it was a stadium and then a gigantic circular parking lot around the stadium. Jerry World's kind of that way in Dallas as a new stadium, but in Chicago at Soldier Field, not really anywhere to park right around there. You kind of got to park and walk or park underneath Soldier Field or in that area. It's interesting based on that. But yes, that is a burgeoning fact storyline that Hammond, Indiana is a viable site for the future of the Chicago Bears. That news as of just last week. Let's talk Minnesota Vikings with our final few moments here. I popped up to this exercise today, was just thinking about, you know what, where's this team great? Where's this team good? Where's this team deficient talent-wise? Let's talk offensive position group rankings. 1 through 6, best unit first, and then 6 being the most talent devoid or concerning unit on the offensive side. I have my scores here. I'm not a Vikings expert, but I got wide receiver at 1. Do you agree with that? I would assume they're high on your list. Do you go wide receiver at 1 as well?
Yes, I had to think twice, but I did go wide receiver at 1 because Juwan Jennings is on this team. If he was not, I'd probably have them at number 2. But Jennings is the cake topper. He is the cherry on the offseason because historically, at least in the last 20 years, the Vikings really don't prioritize WR3. It's usually KJ Osborne, Jalen Naylor, BC Johnson, just some guy who can get you 400 yards or so. This Jennings signings proves that they're getting serious about this position for once. And like, if you pretended that the Vikings had a top three quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, or Joe Burrow, you would look at these weapons and think, oh my holy God. But because we have what we consider this reclamation story of Kyler Murray, we look at the weapons, we're like, oh yeah, this can work. But this is an outstanding wide receiving core for any quarterback.
So wide receiver at one, we agree on that. I'm not sure if we agree on number two or not. Tell me where you went.
I have offensive tackle.
Me too.
Christian Darrisaw. The best part about last week's OTAs that Christian Darrisaw said his knee felt as good as it had in the last 2 years and that he felt great. That was the single best encouraging thing you could learn from Vikings OTAs. The club also has Brian O'Neill, who has been their steady Eddie since 2018. And then they drafted Caleb Tiernan from Northwestern. They signed Ryan Vandermark from Buffalo, who can be their good backup tackle when something happens to Brian O'Neill or Christian Darrisaw. And they still have some stragglers from the late rounds like Walter Rouse, who was drafted a couple years ago. So usually in an offseason, I don't know if the Packers do this as well, the Vikings find one good backup offensive tackle. This year they found two, and Ryan Vandermark, and using a third rounder from the Sam Darnold compensatory pick to get Caleb Tiernan. So this is a good and deep offensive tackle group.
So I had tackle there as well. Position three out of six. This is going to be up for debate, too. I went quarterback here. Where do you slide in? Are you also a quarterback three?
Wow. I wonder if we're going to run the gauntlet. I have this at number three because I sound like a broken record. I do not consider Kyler Murray some imbecile that's trying to make his career right. I think he's really good as is. He just was on a crappy franchise that is known for doing crappy things. And then you take into account they have McCarthy, who's still 23, that does have upside, even though he's like the meme king. And then Carson Wentz as your third guy. This is a deep quarterback room. So if you want to do this using rational analysis, you have Murray, McCarthy, and Wentz, and that's deeper than most rooms. It's just that most of us have to see it to believe it, with Murray being the guy within O'Connell's system.
So quarterback at three, we are ranking Vikings offensive position groups right now on the show. One went to wide receiver, two tackle, three quarterback. At number four, this might be the spot where we split hairs and differ. I went interior offensive line at number four. Where did you go?
Well, we did indeed differ. I have tight end here. Another thing, kind of like my Murray speech, is I don't consider TJ Hockenson this has-been who isn't very good anymore. Right. I considered him a guy who was the Vikings' sixth offensive lineman last year because of Kevin O'Connell forced him into that role. And then at a TE2, even though he's not a huge touchdown scorer or pass catcher, Josh Oliver is probably a top two blocking tight end in the NFL. So to me, when I still think of Hockenson, I think of the guy who will catch 60, 70 passes. And after that, they have Gavin Bartholomew and Ben Jurosek. So to me, this is right in the middle of the Vikings' deepest offensive position.
And again, that's an unheralded storyline this year, is who and what is TJ Hockenson the rest of the way? Because for me, I'm very bearish on him right now. I'm not feeling great about where he's going, the explosiveness. I understand he was asked to do a lot more blocking this past year, but the statistical dip, pretty well noted in the last three seasons, as a matter of fact, has been very largely unavailable. Missed few games in this past season, missed a lot of games in 24 and a handful of games in 2023. TJ Hockenson in the tight end group, I had them at number six my list. Number five on your list, where do you go? I went running back, fullback on this one.
I have running back. Now, if the Vikings still had Mike Zimmer or Kyle Shanahan, I would be more than content with this group and probably have this at number three or four, because if you think about it, Aaron Jones, even though he's old, Jordan Mason, another steady Eddie, and then we shall see what we have in DeMond Claiborne. That is a good group. But Kevin O'Connell, for four seasons, has refused to run the football at a balanced clip, so much so that when they ranked 19th in rush play call percentage last year, I did cartwheels. I was like, oh, he's finally improving. He's actually running the football. And that propelled their five-game win streak to end the season as they finally started running the football, because they realized that the quarterback efficiency was crap. So if we had a head coach that understood that you don't have to be a run-first offense, but you still need to run the ball at a balanced clip, I would put this group higher. But because I know that I'm going to be looking at the stats in week four thinking, God, they're only running the ball 37% of the time. I wish they'd change that. That's what I do every year. I have this down at number 5 out of 6.
So number 6 for you would be interior offensive line. I think that says a lot about the center position more than the guards right now. But talk to me about that group and why you view them as the worst of a pretty decent overall offense for the Minnesota Vikings, but number 6 interior offensive line for you.
Probably because I'm salty that they could have got a more bona fide center solution. There were 4 decent prospects in the draft that they just bypassed, kind of like they did running back until they got to Claiborne. But in free agency, there was, how do you say Tyler Biadiaz? How do you say it?
Biadasz,
yeah. He was available. Mm-hmm. Luke Fortner, Cade Mays, all of these guys were available, and the Vikings said, no, we have Blake Brandel, who's like 6'8", who's going to be the 6'8 center for 5'10 Kyler Murray. So although Brando played decent at center, I'm skeptical to think that at age 29, he's going to shape-shift into a wonderful center. And then last year's big acquisition, Will Fries, was, for his contract standards, really mediocre. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to pay him the 4 years and whatever it was, 80-something million, his PFF grade should be 75, 85, not 60, like, as it was. So those two guys have to prove it to me this year that they are good, while to me, Donovan Jackson is progressing just fine. So when I stack it up against the rest of positions, you have two guys that have a lot of pressure on them to show that they belong, and then a rookie who is trying to take his next step. And that brings me to the weakest position. But I will say, compared to where the offensive line, the interior, used to be during the Mike Zimmer days, this is a breath of fresh air.
So there's your ranking of Vikings offensive position groupings. One more time, rapid fire through what you had there, starting with wide receiver.
Wide receiver at number 1, offensive tackle, number 2, quarterback, number 3, tight end, number 4, running back, number 5, and interior offensive line, number 6.
Pretty fun exercise. We'll do it on the defensive side when the Baker family returns from an extended trip out to Italy. Lastly, before we say so long to hour one, we like to talk quarterbacks on this show. Baker Mayfield and the Bucks are reportedly far apart on contract value. 31-year-old Baker Mayfield, big statistical regression last year. Do you buy Baker short-term, long-term? Do you sell him? Do you re-sign him? Do you sit and wait? What do you do if you're Tampa?
Well, I don't think you can let him skedaddle, and I can say this because I just witnessed Sam Darnold winning a Super Bowl with the Seahawks, so I have firsthand knowledge as to how that feels. Now, I think the problem is that Baker Mayfield, we know he has swagger. We know he's cocky. Mm-hmm. So he and his agent are probably saying, show me 55, 60 million. And
yep.
The Bucks are like, you know, daggummit, do I really have to do that? I think you have to. I think you can structure it where, just like your guy Christian Watson, that it's more of a 2-year deal than anything. But we would have a bonanza next free agency if Baker Mayfield hit the open market, where probably 5-6 teams that were quarterback hungry would unload that $60 million per year for him. So I would say, if you're the Buccaneers, although it's not ideal to pay a, 10th, 11th, 12th best quarterback in the mm-hmm. league, $60 million, that's how the way it works in the NFL.
Baker Mayfield, mixed results as far as wins and losses in Tampa go. His record with the Buccaneers as the starter, 27-24. That's Dustin Baker, Stone Baker on a Tuesday. Wish you guys safe travels. We'll talk to you again real darn soon.
Yeah, man. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right. Very excited for a trip recap, a Italian vacation for the Baker family. When we come back, headlines and highlights on the way. The latest from the NBA and NHL, where several coaching hires have been made in the NHL. And in the NBA, the Spurs silenced MSG last night. That was pretty darn fun to watch, I'd say. That and more coming up around the corner on a Tuesday edition of Overtime.